And so it is, we continue the story of Joseph. Our first reading this morning came from chapter 43 of Genesis, and it picks up the story just a wee while on from where we left it last week. The years of famine have arrived. Whilst those in Egypt have enough, assuming they can afford to buy it, in Canaan, Joseph's family have run out of food. The last stocks bought in from Egypt are gone. And so Jacob tells his sons to go back and buy some more. They're hesitant, because the last time the man in charge had questioned them about their brother and had said they could not come back unless they brought their brother with them. The man, I hope you have worked out, was Joseph. His brothers had failed to recognize him. Our second reading from Genesis sees Joseph face to face with his brothers again. But it's worth briefly hearing what's happened in the interim. They had arrived in Egypt and had brought their youngest brother, Benjamin, with them. Presenting themselves to Joseph, they are taken to Joseph's house, where Joseph quizzes them about their family, wanting to know if their father is still alive. Overcome with emotion, Joseph leaves the room, gathers himself together, and then returns and they eat a meal. Not together, though, because Joseph's at one table and his brother's at another. Egyptians don't eat with Israelites. It was considered beneath them. After the meal, Joseph instructs the servants to fill up his brother's sacks with the grain and the food that they want, and he then sets a trap, adding that they should place his silver cup and the money they would have paid for Benjamin's grain in his sack. He then tells the servants to let his brothers leave, but after a while to chase after them and demand to know why they have stolen the cup and the money. This they do, and Benjamin is taken in as a slave as punishment for the apparent theft. The rest of the brothers are told that they can go, but Judah begs Joseph not to let them go without Benjamin. Their father has already lost one son. To lose another would surely break his heart and kill him. And we hear how Joseph confesses to his brother who he is. The brothers are not convinced, but eventually they believe him, and as we read, things got very emotional. The final chapters of Genesis are the happily ever after chapters, the family reconciled. Over the last 3 weeks, we have heard snippets of the story. Often when we hear Joseph's story in church, we just get a bit of it and then try to apply an understanding of the whole story. What I've tried to do over the past few weeks is to delve a little deeper and to understand what's happening in each of the episodes that we've listened to and read, and how we can learn something from each of them. 2 weeks ago, we thought about Joseph the dreamer, a young man just 17 with his life ahead of him. And we pondered what dreams 17-year-olds might have today and what dreams we might have for them. Last week, we thought about Joseph's motivation for stockpiling during the years of plenty, learning perhaps for the first time that his motives were not quite so as benevolent as we might have first thought, that he was guilty of exploiting the hunger of the Egyptians for financial gain. And we pondered what that might say to us in the here and now, about how those who have plenty can be guilty of exploiting those who have very little, and how supporting tradecraft and by buying fair trade products, we can help the most vulnerable in our world. So what can we learn from today's episode? The story of Joseph is an epic tale of family. But what place does this story have in the story of God? Why is it important to us? God barely gets a mention. Except, we'll come back to that. Have you ever had a scab that won't heal? One that hangs around for weeks, and it won't heal primarily because you won't leave it alone. Last year, I had a sore toe. It was quite painful. Sore because of a wee bit rag nail that was digging in, and I decided to poke about at it once too often. It got really, really sore, and it turned out that I had infected my toe by poking at it instead of leaving alone after I'd removed the rag nail. It seems ridiculous, doesn't it, to poke away at my toenail rather than allowing it to heal, picking away at the scab rather than leave it alone. And yet many of us do it regularly, not just with physical wounds, but with emotional ones. Someone says or does something that wounds our heart, hurts our feelings, and rather than letting it go and letting our heart heal, we pick at it. We replay the words over and over in our heads, sometimes changing the conversation so that we are the ones who inflict the pain. We tell our story to our friend to elicit their support and justify our anger. We all do this, and it isn't helpful and it isn't healthy, but it is human. The story of Joseph. Joseph is a man who deals with his wounds in a very different way. Now, Joseph's family are what we might call in today's language dysfunctional. Joseph had 10 older brothers, and back in those days, it was the oldest son in the family who was usually the favoured son, but not in this family. Joseph's father, Jacob, loved Joseph more than his other sons, and he didn't hide his preference. In fact, he gave Joseph that special coat so that everyone would know that Joseph was the golden child of the family. And this didn't go down well, as we know, with his brothers. And as we followed the story, we followed Joseph into a pit and out again, into a pit and out again, and we've watched him rise to the great heights of power and influence. When he was in those pits, Joseph didn't wallow in self-pity. But do you know what I would be doing in prison? I'd probably be picking at the sore bit on my toe, nursing my anger towards my brothers and those who had falsely accused me. But not Joseph. Joseph keeps focusing forward, and he makes the best of his situation, and his story ends up being one of personal success. In our readings today, Joseph finds himself in a position to exact revenge on his brothers. And we get a sense of the inner turmoil he's in as he tests his brothers. But in the end, his heart tells him the right thing to do, and it's to welcome his brothers in and to look after them. And the story becomes one of reconciliation. Let me ask you a question. What would you do if you had the power to punish those who had burned you, wounded you, betrayed you, or broken your heart? What would you do? In Genesis chapter 50, we read at verse 15 to 20 what Joseph did. And let's hear those words. After the death of their father, Joseph's brother said, "What if Joseph still hates us and plans to pay us back for all the harm we did to him?" So they sent a message to Joseph. "Before our father died, he told us to ask you, please forgive the crime your brothers committed when they wronged you. Now please forgive us the wrong that we, the servants of your father's God, have done." Joseph cried when he received this message. Then his brothers themselves came and bowed down before him. "Here we are before you as your slaves," they said. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. I can't put myself in the place of God. You plotted evil against me, but God turned it into good in order to preserve the lives of many people who are alive today because of what happened. You have nothing to fear. I will take care of you and your children." So he reassured them with kind words that touched their heart. I think this is a most stunningly beautiful moment in the biblical story. If revenge is sweet, Joseph was standing at the doorway of a sweetie shop. And with just a word, Joseph could have had his revenge on his brothers, had them in prison or sold them into slavery, or had them tortured or even executed. It was in his power to do so. But he didn't. He didn't seek revenge. In fact, if you read the story carefully, you'll discover that even when his brothers asked for forgiveness, Joseph didn't actually forgive them. It isn't that Joseph was harboring a grudge. It was that in Joseph's mind, judgment was God's job, not his. Over the years, Joseph hadn't been picking at the scab of his pain. He had let his pain go years ago. Joseph wasn't focused on what his brothers had done. Joseph was focused on what God was doing. Genesis 50, verse 20, "You plotted evil against me, but God turned it into good in order to preserve the lives of the many who are alive today because of what happened. God turned the evil into good. Or to put it another way, Joseph was saying to his brothers, I know that you were trying to weave a thread of pain into my life, but that's okay because God took that thread and wove it into my life and made something beautiful with it. God used it for good. Accompanied by the story of the lost son from Luke's gospel, Joseph's story is a reminder of the way that God's love works. Another question for you. Have you ever looked at the back of a tapestry? It's usually a mess of threads and knots with very little discernible pattern. But when you turn the tapestry over and look at the front, you see beauty and order. And I think that's one of the things that Joseph's story is trying to teach us. Throughout life, we have a choice. We can focus on what people and circumstances have done to us. We can focus on the pain. But that's like focusing on the back of the tapestry. And it usually leaves us picking at our scabs, making us bitter and disillusioned. Or we can do what Joseph did. We can focus not on what others have done, but on what God is doing. We can stay open to the way that God takes our pain and weaves it into our lives to make something beautiful. I said earlier that in Joseph's story, God barely gets a mention, except. And the except is that God, although it doesn't get mentioned often and is not portrayed as playing a major role, we're told repeatedly that God was with Joseph. Back in chapter 39 at verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph and made him successful. He lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Then at verse 21 to 23, we read, but the Lord was with Joseph and blessed him so that the jailer was pleased with him. The phrase, the Lord was with Joseph, quite possibly the most important theme in this entire story. But just because the Lord is with you doesn't mean that life will always be easy. And that's true for a lot of our biblical heroes. Their stories are often stories that aren't easy, but God is with them. Think about Joseph, falsely accused and imprisoned. Can you imagine? Not only sold into slavery by your own brothers, but imprisoned for something you didn't do. When the story says that in every difficult situation, God was with Joseph, I think it means that God was at work weaving something good into Joseph's life. I'm sure there are moments when Joseph couldn't see it and struggled to believe it. But in the end, because he was focused on what God was doing, Joseph wasn't bitter. He was better. And that makes him a hero of our faith. What a great lesson for us. We can trust that God is with us in our painful circumstances, inviting us to focus not on what others have done to us, but on what God is doing in us. In the book of Romans in chapter 8, Paul wrote these words, we know that in all things God works for good with those who love him, those whom he has called according to his purpose. Now that doesn't mean that God is causing our challenges. It's an invitation to dare to believe that no matter how dark the thread, God can weave it into something beautiful in our lives. Joseph is a hero in our faith story, not because he had the power to exact revenge, but because he had the grace to let go. He didn't pick at the scabs of his wounds. He didn't focus on what others had done. He was focused on what God was doing. And today I want to challenge you and me to be heroic in that way. I want to challenge us to stop picking our scabs, to stop focusing on what our circumstances are or what other people have done to us, and focus instead on what God is doing, weaving something beautiful into our lives. I have always struggled over the years with the idea that God has a plan for each of us. The idea of people suffering, of lives cut short, doesn't sit easily with my understanding of a loving God. The biggest theological question we have is, why does God allow suffering? And I want to suggest he doesn't, but that we do. We do because we don't respond to the prompting of God. Like Joseph, God is with us. And like Joseph, it's up to us to acknowledge God's presence and to act accordingly. If we want the better world we thought about the other week, then we have to respond to God's prompting and make better choices in the future. If we want justice for all in the world, then we have to respond to God's prompting and make better choices in the future. Allow God to work in your heart and respond to the prompting of the Spirit and do things differently in the future. And if we do, then like Joseph, like the lost son, God's love will show us that it is never too late. Amen.